Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 13. Today, we're actually going to switch gears up again a little bit. Instead of talking about a specific paper, we're actually going to go over a couple of different papers indirectly. We're not going to go into the same detail we've done before, and it's actually going to be in response to another podcast I was on, that is the S-Gym with Ken Milne, and I've been on there twice to talk about abscesses. Now, abscesses are, we see them all the time. It's not our favorite thing. Maybe some people really love the pus and stuff, but that's not for me. But what I do like to do is help educate students, other PAs and docs, whoever else, NPs, about how to manage abscesses. And I have my own separate approach. There's lots of different approaches, I think. And, you know, there's lots of different ways that people are going to recommend it. Now, I'm not saying that my approach is any better than anyone else's, and this is strictly mine. This does not mean that you're going to see that the next time you go to the ER, or if you're a student, the next time you're working with someone. That's not what I'm trying to encourage, and I want to remind people that this is my opinion. This is not medical advice. This is not something that I want you to then turn around and use. I have a full disclosure on the website, but basically this is all for entertainment and education, but not necessarily to be used as expert witness or medical opinion or stuff like that that's going to be used in any sort of legal sense or professional sense. This is all for open discussion and to facilitate that type of discussion in medical education. So with all that said, please remember, this is just a podcast where we're all working together on this, and if you want to incorporate some of these, there is evidence base to it, but I'm not necessarily saying you have to do it this way or this is the only way it can be done. All right, I think we covered the disclosure well enough. Now, what I like to do is probably go through a stepwise approach of how I manage most abscesses. Now, keep in mind, this is most. These are the relatively uncomplicated type abscesses, plus or minus overlying cellulitis. But we're going to say that overall, it's a more minor type. It's not something that's requiring hospital admission or has someone who's in a high-risk population where you have to maybe do a few things differently. This is our routine setup. Now, the first thing after the history and physical, what I like to do is if I have an abscess or if I'm questioning if it's an abscess, anything like that, if I think that it's at all on my differential, including if it's maybe it's a cellulitis that actually is mimicking an abscess, and there may not actually be a pocket of fluid, before I start sticking the needle in there or sticking the knife or whatever, my first part is I'm going to grab an ultrasound. Now, I understand not everyone's going to have an ultrasound, but if you have an ultrasound at hand, this makes so much of a difference. And I really encourage you that if you're working in a department that doesn't have an ultrasound, you're way behind. And this is my little time to say, please work with whatever administrator, do whatever you need to do, bring ultrasound into your emergency department. You can even bring this into a clinic setting. There are cheap ultrasound devices out there. I say cheap as a relative term. I mean, I understand there are devices out there that are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, but there are also ones that are available for less than $10,000. In fact, I had one that was less than $8,000 in a clinic setting that I had been in before. The reason why I mention that is because it is very beneficial to have an ultrasound in a case like this. Say you're not exactly sure if this is just a bad cellulitis, or maybe there really is a pocket of fluid underneath. Before you start sticking needles in there, or scalpels, or anything else, grab that ultrasound device, bring it to the bedside. I like to use the linear probe, usually for abscesses, because it's more superficial structure, and the higher frequency allows for a little clearer picture. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put it over, you know, I'm going to put lots of gel so it's a little more comfortable. Patients actually, sometimes that cool gel, this is one of those times where they may find it a little more comfortable. Then I'm going to gently put the probe over it, and I'm going to scan both in longitudinal and transverse planes. And what I'm doing is I'm looking over to see, is this cobblestoning that I only see? I don't see a pocket of hyperechoic fluid, hypoechoic fluid potentially. Is there any fluid there? And is it in a big enough collection that it's worth going for? I know other people that I work with and other people I've talked to kind of in general, some people are going to suggest that maybe if it's less than a centimeter, it's small enough that really antibiotics alone may be it. So that's something to keep in mind. Is it bad cobblestoning? And so maybe it's not really an abscess. That's going to be a little more of a judgment thing. And if you're not used to ultrasound, that may be something that you need to kind of learn a little bit first before you go into that part. But let's say you get this big, obvious fluid that you can see, this pocket of something underneath the skin. Say in round figures, it's 2.8 by 3.2 centimeters longitudinal, and then it's, you know, the same thing, 2.8 by 3.2 centimeters in transverse or whatever else. But you see a good sized pocket of fluid. That's probably not something that's just going to go away by antibiotics alone. And as Ken Milne likes to say, better out than in. That's him doing a Scottish accent, not me. I think I can do it a little bit better. But what I'd like to say is that when you look at the abscess itself, see not only what's in there and measure it, but also actually look at what's around it. You know, is there overlying cobblestoning or is there nearby cobblestoning that could suggest that there's cellulitis in addition to that abscess? Especially if the area of erythema is much smaller than the actual pocket of fluid. Also take into account some of the places you may be draining abscess may not necessarily be the safest place. How deep does it go? So that's important, because if it's very superficial, you don't want to over-penetrate when you stick that scalpel in there. Now, if it's deep, like we were talking about, maybe it's 3.2 centimeters or so, that's not as big of an issue. That's something to keep in mind. But it also gives you an idea of how much fluid's going to come out of there. If there's a lot of fluid, if there's going to be a lot of cc's, then that's good to know before you get started in the process. So that way you have an expectation of how much should be coming out. The other thing I like to do is look for any, you know, vessels, potentially nerves, depending on how good your ultrasound device is or stuff like that. But look and see, maybe there's going to be a vein or even like a little artery that is going to give you a lot of trouble if you cut it. If you can see that in advance, you could potentially avoid hitting those areas, and you could save yourself a lot of headache there. I know since I've done ultrasound that risk is much, much lower, and I'm glad to have that on hand because I can now look and scan through my fields and check. So ultrasound is usually the first thing I do. All right, so I've identified my area. It is an abscess. It is something that's going to need to be drained. Okay, so how do I set up for that? Now, most people are going to have kits, and by that I mean you may have a lactrate kit, you may have an IND kit. These are made by different manufacturers, and it's good to know what yours is before you get started on that track. But usually you're going to have a kit, and that kit is going to have a few basic things in it, or if it doesn't have those things in it, you're going to want some other stuff to grab. The main things I look for, sometimes I want a culture swab, especially if it's a high-risk person or I think this is going to be a high risk for complications. Anymore, I just usually grab it on hand, and that's just kind of a personal preference because we do have people who bounce back on occasion, but usually I put them on the correct antibiotic from the beginning, and we'll talk more about antibiotics here in a second. I grab a culture swab. I make sure to get lots of gauze, and I usually get 4x4s. It kind of works out best, so I get lots of gauze. If you want to do packing, you want to grab packing. I personally don't do packing. And there is research to back that up. We'll also include that in the show notes as well. But I'm not one for packing. I'm also going to grab, of course, a scalpel. Usually in these kits, they may have an 11 blade. 11 blade, I think, is fine for something like this. You may grab hemostats, especially in the kits. It seems like there's usually some sort of pickups or forceps, there's usually some sort of hemostat, and usually scissors because of the packing. But I like to have some sort of blunt instrument that I could gently kind of break up loculations if I need to and check for tunneling and stuff like that. Because tunneling may not always be as clear in an ultrasound, but usually you're going to see it. But it's just good to kind of have in case you need to break stuff up. So after I grab those things, of course I need to grab whatever is going to be my anesthetic. Now, if you're in a place where you can do procedural sedation, it's actually encouraged. Awesome, 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 awesome. Glad for you to have that ability, because unfortunately, the shops I'm at, that's not really something that's routinely done. Usually, if they think it's that bad, then it's probably someone who needs to be a surgical candidate for whatever X, Y, or Z reason. So unfortunately, I don't get to have that as much. I may give them a little medicine, make them more comfortable, but true, you know, procedural sedation is hard to come by. Personally, I believe that the more anesthesia you can give them, the better. That usually is providing anesthesia to the local area as well. What I like to do is, personally, because of the longer effect and because it can help with the bleeding issues and stuff like that, I use lidocaine 1% with epinephrine. nice thing is you can use that everywhere. That's also been backed up. It's pretty safe. But I like the fact that it can last longer than just plain lidocaine 1%. So what I like to do is grab, usually it's a 30cc bottle of lidocaine 1% with Epi, and I draw it all up ahead of time. I don't just drop a little bit of what I think I'm going to need. I take those nice big 10cc syringes, I grab them, and I fill three of those 10cc syringes right up. Then I usually grab, it's a 27 gauge inch and a quarter needle. That's the way it's on the box. And I usually grab those. I like long, thin needles because they hurt a little less when they go in, and I can penetrate more. I do the same thing with laceration repair. Usually I'm going to go with those longer needles. I don't like the short tips. And the nice thing is they're interchangeable. I can, with a long needle, I can go pretty much anywhere that I need to go. With short needles, that's not always the case. So I always like to grab longer because I feel pretty comfortable with that. And I would highly, highly encourage you to consider the same thing. Grab a lot of anesthesia. When I go in, that is when I go in, I actually use a needle at the edges in a straight line. So I'm going parallel to one another, and I'm going in this straight through. I'll even go through underneath the abscess or sometimes through the abscess itself, but I'd go straight across in a line, one after the other after the other. And then I will usually do a little bit of a checkerboard where, so it's going to go, I work my way around parallel until I'm going to the, you know, at basically the 90 degree of where I started. And then I do the same thing again. So in the end, it looks like a grid or a checkerboard pattern. And that's for people, I really want to numb it up. I really want to get good coverage. And I'm not just going for the abscess itself, but I'm also going to go into the surrounding tissue. And the reason why I'm doing that is when you drain an abscess, you tend to squeeze that area, and you're doing a lot of squeezing, a lot of pressure. That hurts, you know, that just try and pinch your skin. And if you get those cold painy sprays or whatever else, you know, those cold sprays that you can use as kind of a very brief anesthetic, spray that on and then pinch the area around. You'll realize it still hurts. So the same concept here, work a little bit around the tissue, the areas you're probably going to squeeze, and numb that up too. The patient's really going to appreciate that. So that's what I do next. I start prepping my field. Some people, and I don't know this as well, I just think might as well try and keep it as clean as possible. I tend to go more of a sterile approach. That doesn't mean you have to necessarily go sterile, but personally, I'm going to go more sterile just to keep everything a little bit cleaner, at least to start with. So what I do is I set up my field, and then I anesthetize the area. And after I anesthetize the area, I'm going to then move on to cleaning it again, usually. So cleaning it a second time. Now, different people have different thoughts. I tend to use something not betadine based. I can't remember what the others are. I think it is Sure Cleanse, but I can't remember the non-commercial name, or it may be the commercial name. I don't know. But I usually use Sure Cleanse. Sometimes I'll use Chloraprep, something along those lines. Again, or chlorhexidine. There we go. I think that's sometimes stuff that we can have available. And I can't remember which ones are commercial and non-commercial names. So apologies there, not recommending a specific commercial product. Just, I don't like betadine as much for something like this. I have a whole set of other reasons for that. I'll probably do another podcast on that some other time. When I clean the area off, I'm going to let it dry like you would any other time. And this is usually when I'm setting up the rest of my sterile field. So this is when I get all of my equipment. This is when I get my swabs out, everything like that. I get everything laid out. And then once it's time to go, I'm going to use usually those little pickups. So they're like Adson forceps or whatever. I'm going to gently squeeze over the area to see if it's anesthetized properly and see if that's to the patient's satisfaction. Almost always it is because of my approach. One quick thing, when you're doing the local anesthetic, be careful about how big, like it's bubbling up on the skin, it's tending up the skin. If it's getting bigger, be careful because you don't want all of a sudden have it squirting out in all directions, especially if you're not set up yet. I usually wear a face mask plus eye protection. I'll even wear a gown if I'm worried this is going to be a big mess. And I do the same thing with my student or whoever else is with me at the time. After you do all that, you know, make sure it's anesthetized and it's to the patient's satisfaction and your satisfaction. Then I go for the area that's most fluctuant, or that would be in the center based on my ultrasound, at least as long as it's safe in that spot, because I was looking for vessels and everything else. And I make a stab incision. It doesn't have to be a huge incision, doesn't have to be this massive one, but I make it big enough that it's going to drain well. Sometimes I'm going to get immediate return of pus. As soon as I get a good sample, you know, I like to even keep the 4x4s right over so I can cover in case it decides to squirt and spread everywhere. But what I like to do is after I get that quick stab incision, then I'm going to grab that culture swab. If I was going to do a culture swab, which like I said, I tend to. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to then grab that culture swab and get a nice, quick, good sample of it. Put it in the tube and set it off to the side. And I make sure that I'm as clean as possible. So that way I'm not handing this junky covered tube over to the nurse later when they need to send it to the lab. I'm making sure it's as clean as possible first. And trust me, your nurses will appreciate this. I get my sample and then I start squeezing away as much as possible. Now, some people will say, well, do you need to irrigate the abscess? Nope. We've covered that as well on the S-Gym. And really, irrigation isn't beneficial. So after I get everything out, now sometimes that's not to say I won't do any irrigation. My one caveat with that is if I'm not totally sure I've got the pus out, I will sometimes, in my particular kit I have, has two 10cc sterile syringes of normal saline. And what I'll do is I'll open one of those up and I will usually try and in that hole I had that should be big enough that I could put the end of that in. And I just kind of push it in there gently. And I see what comes out. If it's still murky, if it still looks like there's a lot of pus in there, I probably didn't do a good enough job. But if it's clear or maybe has a little bit of blood in it, okay, I've probably got everything out of there, especially if I've already looked around for loculations and all that and I broke it up with the hemostat or whatever else I'm using. So I clean all that up. And then if I wanted to do, say, a loop abscess drainage, which has been covered on other podcasts before and is definitely something to consider, but that's something you need to talk about with your patient and you may even need to talk to with your, you know, your medical director or everyone else. It's people know what you're doing because loop abscess drainage is a little bit of a different technique and you have to have somewhat the right supplies for it, but that's actually pretty easy to do. You could probably even use, now I'm not recommending this specifically, but you could potentially use something like that packing that you had before if you don't have the other stuff that was recommended in the original research or what some of the other people have done with the loop abscess drainage. Whatever you're going to do, if you're completely done, you've got everything out, you feel like it's good, if you're going to make that second incision so you can do that loop abscess drainage, great. If you want to pack, you can. This is your time. Personally, I'm not going to do that. Every now and then, I'm going to do the loop abscess drainage. It just depends, and that's going to be something that I talk about with the patient in detail. And again, if you want, we can cover that in a separate podcast, even though some other people have covered it before. If it's smaller, though, I'm not worried about that, and I think it's going to heal rather well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put some sort of non-stick dressing over it just in case it does ooze a little bit of blood or drainage or whatever. It's not going to stick to the patient and hurt to change it. I'm going to review care instructions in good detail, and then I'm going to talk about antibiotics. Some of you are thinking, wait, antibiotics? Isn't that the stuff we don't do for abscesses anymore? I challenge you otherwise. We actually have just covered on the S-Gym using antibiotics, specifically trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, TMP-SMX, also known as Bactrim, also known as Ceftra, also known as Sulfatrim, also known as probably something else to someone else. Those antibiotics work rather well with about a number need to treat of 14 to help with reducing the risk of complications with the infection, specifically needing additional management for abscesses. I have done this actually the whole time through, even when there were some naysayers that saying, well, maybe we don't actually need antibiotics, because if you really read the older research, it wasn't that strong. Now, you could argue that about other things you do in medicine, but with that one, I thought antibiotics, anecdotally, I had seen quite a bit of improvement. I did not agree with the original research, so I was really glad that we were able to cover this randomized controlled trial through the S-Gym and talk about how abscesses actually probably could benefit still from getting TMP-SMX as an antibiotic. So I talk about that with the patient. Usually what I do, a double strength of the traditional TMP-SMX, and I do that twice a day every 12 hours. And with my patient population, I make sure to specify every 12 hours because I get those people who say, well, I took it twice a day about an hour apart. Maybe it would work, but I'd rather have you spread out the dosings. So that tends to work a little bit better. And I had them do that twice a day for 10 days. And that's been kind of a standard where I'm at, and that's been a standard of our area. And with our population, I tend to use it a lot because we have a high MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA. We have a high, high prevalence of that in my area. I don't know if that's because of healthcare, if that's because we're near a military base, if that's because just jail systems in general. I don't know if that's just, hey, this is the way it's coming in the U.S., but in my area in particular, we have a very high prevalence of MRSA. And so I'm going to make sure to cover my patients for that. If I'm treating an abscess, usually, unless there's an allergy or something else otherwise that makes me not go down the TMPSMX pathway, that's what I'm going to use. And our local cultures and sensitivities support that. We have a very good efficacy for using TMPSMX in that population. And really, in general, almost all of our abscesses are pretty well treated with that combination. Now, I would highly encourage you that if you are going to use antibiotics in your patients, which you probably should be, like I said, the study is specifically for trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. Your population may not necessarily fit in that same bracket. You may have a local resistance to it, and I don't know that. I won't know that without knowing what your nomogram looks like. So talk to your local lab. Your lab, your hospital lab should have that information. And if you're like me and work in different parts of a state or different areas in general, talk to all those different places because that local population will vary. So after I know what my antibiotics are going to be, which in my place is going to be trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, I'm going to give them that, and we're going to talk about the treatment plan and how to follow up with it. I want them to follow up at some point because there is some potential of complications, or it just may not get better. And I tell people, it's not a guarantee to get better. What we're doing is making it as good as possible for this to heal. So usually that is going to be my approach. As a quick recap, what I'm going to do, I'm going to make sure I use local anesthetics. Some people use buffered. I personally don't. It's a very, where I'm at, it's hard to do, just like sedation's hard to do. It's hard to get everything and get it working right. And I have some questions about just how effective the buffered lidocaine is going to work. So I don't do that for this type of situation. I may use it for something else, or if I have certain patients that specifically request it, or we specifically think it's going to be a good idea, then I will probably do it. But really, with most of my patients, I'm just doing lidocaine 1% with epinephrine, and I'm doing, of course, making sure it's safe in the weight base. But usually, most of my patients, because my patients are big overall, I'm going to probably end up using 10 to 20 cc's of that. I may end up using 30 in really big abscess or one that's going to cause me a lot of trouble. I make sure it works. I prep everything. I like to clean it all. I like to, you know, I make my quick stab incision or as large an incision as appropriate. I'm then going to get everything out of it I possibly can, maybe using just a little bit of saline to make sure I've got everything out if I'm questioning myself. But I'm not doing the full-blown irrigation like previous information has suggested. I'm going to do what our recent studies have shown. And then I'm going to end up giving that person antibiotics after I've taken care of it. And like I said, my preferred antibiotic and what the most recent research that we've covered on the S-Gym shows is trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole is pretty good with a number need to treat of 14. So that is ultimately what I like to do with abscesses. In a quick nutshell, I'm trying to keep this as short as possible, but I want you all to understand why, my approach to it, how I make it work. And in case I happen to have a student or future students who are listening to this, I want them to kind of understand why I'm doing it this way. And you may have other approaches, and especially if you're, you know, an MP, PA, physician, whatever, you may have your own way of doing things. I'm not saying that's wrong at all. In fact, I'd encourage, if you're listening to this and you have a different approach that you think is pretty good, which probably if you're doing this, you've got a pretty good idea why you're doing it, share it with us. We would like to hear what your approach is and why. Now, as a couple of quick housekeeping things here, I want to cover a few things. We are still looking for some potential co-hosts. So if you're interested in joining Total EM as a co-host, or maybe you don't think you have a voice for this, which sometimes I question it myself if I should be talking, but maybe if you don't want to actually be on the show, but you want to help and you want to provide your medical knowledge, that's great. I would love to have people who could just provide me with some feedback or information, or if they want to go over the papers and then I can kind of help summarize what they've gone over and we can review it together, I don't care. I'm happy to talk to you and to make this happen. I would recommend that you go to totalem.org and tell me there, or you can email me directly at thetotalem@gmail.com. Either way, that's great. You can also find me on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, just as per usual. Ultimately, usually everything comes back to thetotalem@gmail.com. It's just whatever step you want to take. We, in addition to that, are also looking for upcoming ideas for shows. We've got some on hand. And maybe you don't want to even be a co-host. Maybe you just want to come on for a show as a guest. That's great, too. I'm always happy to have guests. We've got some more upcoming guest interviews and whatnot to go through. We may have some people who act as co-hosts in the future. It just all depends, and it's all going to vary. But what I'd like you to do is let me know, so that way we can get some stuff rolling. If nothing else, if, say, you just want to share the knowledge, hopefully something like this, so you can do, here's a quick review on abscess and how to manage an abscess. That's great. Share it, like it, do it on Facebook, do it on Twitter, retweet my post, do whatever. Just help spread it. Don't forget, we are also on iTunes, so you can also listen to us there on your podcast. You may even be doing it now. No matter what, the main thing I want everyone to remember is that our goal is to help everyone, especially those in rural settings, especially those who have limited resources. We want to give you the tools of the trade. And this is one of my times when I'm going to give you my tools, my thoughts on how to manage an abscess. Again, this is just more for academic talk at this stage. Okay, so I think we've covered everything pretty well for now. As I usually say, until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.